Billionaire Tom Steyer is the 25th candidate to enter the Democratic presidential race. Steyer says he's looking forward to being completely ignored at the next debate.
Anchorage, Alaska broke temperature records by reaching 90 degrees on the 4th of July. It's appropriate that it happened on July 4th because there's nothing more American than denying climate change. Thank you.
The verdict is still out on that joke, apparently. Eric Swalwell has dropped out of the presidential race. Upon hearing the news, Eric Swalwell was shocked to hear that he was, in fact, running for president. Sometimes you just have to be the guy who punches his time card, tells Biden he needs to pass the torch. You punch out on your time card, and then, you know, he passes the time card. He passes the torch on to someone who can actually win. And sometimes you pass the torch on to someone who can read a joke. Tamara?
A Washington, D.C. area man gave away a massive collection of historic newspapers dating back to the 1920s. It was difficult to understand the newspapers, however, because they did not use phrases like, I was shook, or all the feels.
And finally, President Trump addressed the nation from the Lincoln Memorial on July 4th amid a parade of military tanks. He settled on a parade of tanks when advisors told him he couldn't make a cape out of the Constitution and get launched in on a stealth missile while humping the corpse of Betsy Ross. The Trump Report starts now.
TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes! Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt. Very excited to be Trump reporting with all of you in a different studio, so I forgot where to look, even though the wide shot is always in the same place. So happy to be here. And look who's sitting next to me. Oh, my gosh, it's Scott Moore.
I know, crazy, right? I'm really shaking things up.
I haven't seen
it. It wasn't just the earthquakes here in California.
Our audience is going to see your feud take place on that's on
right.
screen.
Well, we're going to hang a sheet between us, and he's not allowed to cross between us. It happened one night. And on the far end of the desk is, of course, Tamara Brown.
Hello.
Who brings the jokes from downtown, and I only say downtown because it rhymes with brown. Mm-hmm. And also here, for the first time ever, Chaka Smith. Thank you for being here. We appreciate you taking the time. We've been doing the show for... How long ago? Almost 4 years. But 3 full years we've been doing the show now.
Better late than never to join.
And we appreciate you joining us. Thank you. And so there's a lot to talk about. One of the first things that we discussed there at the top of the show was the, you know, a lot of times they say when, you know, one door opens or one door shuts, another one opens. But I would like some of these doors to just stay shut for people running for the Democratic nomination. Eric Swalwell gets out. And, you know, I tried to tell a joke that didn't actually have the words in the right order. But if you felt like he was there to get in a good zinger at Biden and he really wasn't going to do anything else. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, all right, maybe we're starting to get a little bit more manageable. But no, because Tom Steyer is, entitled white guy world of Me Too, not the Me Too we hear about, but like, hey, Me Too, I want to be a president. So now he's in, and I'm like, why is this guy running for president? There's enough. Like, none of these people are going to be president. All 25 of them, none of them are going to be president. But, I mean, it's like...
First of all, I like imagining the person who misunderstands what hashtag Me Too is and thinks that all of those tweets are about.
There are people that think that Me Too means, yeah, Me Too.
Yeah, exactly. No,
definitely.
So, wait, does Harvey Weinstein joining the presidential race? I'm so confused.
You know what? If he did, I think he would probably campaign in Wisconsin. I'm just going to say that he probably would have the foresight to do that. But, how many is too many? Shaka, this is your first time talking about this topic, and it doesn't matter where anybody is on the political spectrum. What do you think when you hear that there are 25 people vying for the nomination of the Democratic candidate?
I like it because I think, for me, being a little bit more, at least on the left when it comes to Trump, I like having more voices that are amplified to call him out. You notice if he does anything, they're actually asking pretty much all the Democratic candidates what they think about it. So even though a little bit of turning on each other, I think they're all unified generally in kind of calling out Trump when he does do something. And so the more voices that are amplified doing that, I'm all for it.
Well, I think that, Tamara, when we do have a nominee that all of these other 24 people aren't going to be like, oh, well, I'm definitely throwing in with Trump. I mean, I think that, you know, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden seem to have had the most friction there on the mm-hmm. debate stage. But obviously, either one of them being the nominee, I can't imagine the other not endorsing them. Do you feel like it will be that unified front, or do you expect the kind of chaos and division that'll make this show a lot more fun over the next year?
I expect it to be Steyer joining the race is going to be completely boring. He might as well not. Like, the next debate, he might get in a handful of words. There's not going to be... Just like every other... let's see. Can I remember, like, Delaney and all of the other, like, minor players that, you know, maybe had a soundbite here or there, but really didn't make any sort of significant impact. He's just going to be another one. I really don't know what he sees himself gaining from joining the race at this point. I think it's that thing. I keep remembering if anybody watched Game of Thrones, how they described Khaleesi at the end of, you know, when you're told that you are the savior over and over and over again, you think that you have this power and you can do no wrong. And as a billionaire who, you know, has gathered this like following of people who have are with him on the his impeach campaign, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that their ego gets so inflated that they're just like, well, I've gotten all of these people to follow me. Why can't I follow, you know, all the way into battle, you know?
Well, I think that sort of inflated sense of self-importance and just completely living in a bubble is why somebody like Bill de Blasio thinks he should run for president. I mean, he couldn't be more hated in the city that he's mayor for. Obviously, he has been elected. So,
and re-elected.
And re-elected. But at the same time, it's like, you can't be popular there. You know, you're not carrying all five mm-hmm. boroughs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did those events, which we talked about on the show, where zero people showed up. Look, to me,
you're like, where people actually left when he showed.
Yeah, we're like negative people, because there were some, and then they left. And, you know, when you have an event and no one's there, that might be the tea leaf that, you know, people aren't that interested in what I have to say. Scott, kind of as an overview, because we did our debate two-night coverage. Mm-hmm. None of us were actually on the panel together. No. Obviously, Shaka, you weren't here. I did the second night.
Scott and I were on the first night.
The first night, that's
with Chelsea.
I did the second night with Chelsea and Drexel, who somehow found his way to the studio for the first time in like 6 months. That's right. That's a shot at you, Drexel.
Don't drag Drexel.
He's like, what do? I did you a favor. I don't care. No, we always appreciate it. But the state of these double baker's dozen worth of candidates. Where do you see it now? And obviously, there's plenty of time, but there's only 2 weeks until another debate. You know, so what do you think that debate's going to look like? And can you project anything outward for the race as a whole, just through the end of this year before we get to?
Well, I was going to say I think the big joke was Larry Sabato, the Virginia political science professor, always said, I want to have 31 candidates do the Baskin Robbins 31 flavors, because it was like one of those things where it was so hard to differentiate some of the people, and I was like, let's just get up to 31 at this point. I kind of agree with you, though, like we talked about, Chuck, like before, is that I think the more voices, the better at this point. And it's going to be a trend going forward on both parties. Whenever there's not an incumbent running, is everyone's going to jump in, especially now with social media and everything else is so much easier. But there's certain people like Tom Steyer that should have just used his money in better ways. Use it to amplify his causes, but also maybe put behind certain candidates that he believes in that actually have more of a chance. My concern is that he's going to end up using the money and then running as an independent or something like that, that's going to take votes away from the liberal wing. And, you know, it's the same thing we talked about. I think we talked about it last time. Maybe it was with the first debate night. It's just how certain candidates might be better suited to run for Senate or local or statewide races versus the presidential run.
And I think they know that, too. Like, so many of them, their motive is just to get their name out there so that people can be more familiar with them for those sort of local races. So,
or appointments later.
Exactly. Like we talked about, too. I said I watched the first night, and I'm like, I see a lot of good cabinet people in this mix on the first night. And I do think as we move forward, we are going to see more people drop out. But like you were saying, once Eric Swalwell dropped out, which I was expecting, we thought the numbers would start dwindling instead of just evening it out by now having Tom Steyer run in,
like,
too.
These debates are for Democrats to pick their kickball team. That's what we're doing.
What were you going to say, Shaka?
In this day and age, things change so quickly with Twitter and public sentiment. You know, a story from 20 years ago might you know, like knock out two people the next day.
Right.
So I think it's also a game of stay in the race the longest and see who gets bruised by some outside causes.
Right. Yeah, it's like musical chairs where all of a sudden like 10 of the chairs could just get kicked over and you're like, oh, wait, I'm actually still standing.
Yeah.
And look, I am fully in favor of white men think that they have enough to say, go ahead and run for president. That's right. I'm on your side, white guys, if you want to run. But you feel like so many of them are kind of saying the same things. Like Swalwell had his zinger, which he loved so much he used it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really...
Which was
Joe Biden passed the torch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I saw you... I mean, look, it's a good line that he saw him, what, 30 years ago, and Joe Biden says, time to pass the torch. Well, Joe, time for you to pass the torch.
Yeah.
Great, but don't say it twice.
Yeah.
You know? It was literally all he had. And it's like, well, yeah, how different was he from Hickenlooper? And I we will never actually say out loud President Hickenlooper. It's not happening.
Senator Hickenlooper, maybe. That's why I think he should run for Colorado Senate.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Look, we know what's legal in Colorado. They'll literally vote for anything. So, you know, he has just as good a chance as...
They'll take a parlay on Hickenlooper and Warren... It's like what betting terms?
Oh
guys.
Yeah, so you, we could do a trifecta.
Yeah,
if you want to put in somebody as Secretary of State.
Exactly, because I still feel like that we've got the top five, and they're going to be pretty steady at least through most of the year between Biden and Warren and Sanders, Kamala Harris and Buttigieg. But
I think Beto's got some. I think he's got some zingers left in him. I think he's got.
That's about all he's got. He doesn't have much money.
Well, he's going to have to acquit himself soon, and I think he's got a posture that does lend itself to public sentiment. So he's got. The things.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a guy who, as I've said many times on the show, he could not win an election running against Count Chocula. He did not beat Ted Cruz. But he does have support and he has excitement.
Yeah.
Which you look at all these candidates on that stage. How many of them are people actually excited about? I'm not saying none, but there are, you know, how passionate are Joe Biden supporters?
Right.
Are they just throwing in on Biden because they think he's going to be the nominee?
Exactly.
You know, like, yeah, I want to get in early. Mm-hmm. You know, let me buy my stock on old Joe Biden at this point. So
that's exactly what I've said, too, is that, and we talked about this on the first debate night, is that it's different than a workhorse type candidate for even statewide for governor or Senate or your reps. You can have the more bland personalities because you know you're voting them to go to work. But when you are voting for a president, you want to feel passionate. You want to feel like they're a great leader.
Yeah.
You want to feel like you want to go out and vote for that person. And that's what's the turnout. It's not just to vote against Trump. It's like, who's that person that's really going to motivate as many people as possible to go out and be excited to go vote? So, I do kind of agree with you, Christian. I don't know who that person is right now. That's drawing those type of people that are like, yes, we can't wait to go vote. And it's like Biden's like more of a...
Kamala's kind of getting there, which I always felt like she was running from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising to me that she's swelled in support. And so I'm interested in seeing kind of how that goes into the next debate and the next debate. If she's able to carry this momentum on for another debate, I think she'll kind of emerge as a clear frontrunner.
Also, I mean, I think that she handled herself very well in the debate, but I think Biden was like, oh, wait, I should have prepped for this thing? Don't you guys remember me and Obama? We're like the team. You know, he really felt like he was the guy who was like the most popular in high school, but then it was like the first day of college and you look around like, oh, wait a minute. This is actually, I should have studied.
Yes.
I should have actually done something.
Yes. And he was a little rusty.
I should have just been riding trains all day.
He was very rusty, and that did show, and I think that was part of the thing, is he didn't feel like he had to prepare as much.
If there was anything that he should have been prepared of it was the racial issues that Kamala Harris
brought. Yeah.
Anything else he could have winged it.
Right.
That was the one, and you know, I think he'll ultimately be fine. Whether he's the nominee or not, that certainly remains to be seen. But I think if he has anything that's even remotely like a clunker in the second debate, you know, I mean, if people remember, maybe they don't. But the first Obama Mitt Romney debate, Romney really ran circles around it, and like it was impressive and stunning.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next time Obama came out, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot it. I had a smoke beforehand, so now I'm ready. And I'm talking about cigarettes. I'm not implying anything. Yeah. We all know that he likes cigarettes. So anyway,
have they said how they're dividing up the debates yet? As far as is that still to come?
No, the next one is CNN,
and I think they've ratcheted up the polling.
Yeah, but I think the number's going to be the same. So I feel like Steyer can't be on that debate because he just got in.
And I don't know if he's going to have the numbers in the but
I mean, if he does, that'll be.
I'd be curious how they're going to split the nights up this time, because it was very top heavy for the top.
Yeah.
Obviously on the second night.
And that reminds me, the two programming notes. So next week, we'll be on Wednesday at the same time, 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern, mm-hmm. because Bob Mueller, I don't know who he is, but apparently he's got something to say. So we're going to talk about that on Wednesday instead of, like, you know, doing the Tuesday show. What do you think he's going to say? Mm.
So we're going to actually have the Mueller report.
Yeah. Well, well, there you go. Somebody can do a Photoshop on that. And then I believe the week after is already more debates. I think it's because that's the end of July, right? So
exciting time to be alive.
Yes. Yeah. The regular week, the week after, and
you're
then
right.
the debates
because the 30th and 31st.
Right. Yeah.
So just next week is what we're going to weigh, but right now. But mm-hmm. we're working on scheduling that exciting debate coverage mm-hmm. that I stayed awake for half an hour the first one. But I watched all of the second. I did watch it.
I watched them both.
No, but I couldn't. I fell asleep watching it the night of. And I'm just like, was it 6:30? Anyway, so I want, but I will do my best to be all Hickenlooper all the time. let's see. So there's other, you know, sort of one of the things I was referencing before was the Biden sort of I guess he tried to apologize, but one of an endorsement that would help, obviously, one, of course, there's the support getting an endorsement from Michelle Obama would carry. It would also help, you know, dim some of that spotlight on what is his deal with with black people, with anything, you know, what you know, why does he think that segregationists are okay? But just in general, you know, having a popular first lady, somebody that I think a lot of people would like to have seen on that debate stage, you know, right. they could have traded in 5 or 6 of those mm-hmm. candidates if it meant, you know, mm-hmm. getting a one Michelle Obama on there. But she's is staying back, and I'm wondering, Scott, I'll ask you first. Do you think there's more to that, or it's just too early to endorse something, or was the Obama-Biden team not the 1-2 punch that Biden was trying to sell us on the debate stage?
I mean, she's first lady, and it's not the president, not President Obama, so there's a little bit of a difference there, too, but I do think that they are holding off because their endorsements carry a lot of weight. Not saying that they don't want to go in on Biden, but I don't expect that you would hear from President Obama or Michelle Obama at this point in the race, and not so much again that they're not supportive of him. I think it's just like most people is they want to shop around still. Not saying he's not a great potential candidate, but as most of us talked about, I think you know he had his time and. So, mm-hmm. kind of like Eric Swalwell said. And so I think maybe there is a little bit of reluctance to say, okay, we're all in on Biden right now when we're a year and a half away because who knows, you know, what's going to happen. But I think, if it comes down to it, she will. But any kind of issues or anything with them, I think, would be overblown at this point.
Well, I think she just said she was at the Essence Fest.
Yes.
And she just said, so they're not going to until the general. So they're just going to go with the nominee.
Right, which is the easy answer, and I think they will endorse people as it gets a little bit closer.
You think they will?
I think so, but I don't think they want to influence it and make it seem like, because it carries so much weight to say at this point in the game, oh, you should go after, you know, support Biden or anyone else. So for them, it's like it carries a lot of weight.
I guess Marianne Williamson. That's who I think they're going to throw their weight behind.
Yeah. Well, look, I think we can all throw our weight behind Marianne Williamson. Now I wish Chelsea were here. Because obviously we love having Chelsea on, but also because, you know, she's – I only knew Marianne Williamson's name because Chelsea had talked about her a few times. And now I'm just – it's just kind of a delightful anomaly of like, wait, that's somebody running for president? Shaka, what do you think how much would it impact the race, do you think, if Michelle Obama actually were to be like, oh, you know, it doesn't endorse Biden, but kind of says, oh, you know what, I think that's a sincere apology, we should give him a chance. So that's not an endorsement, but that's an acceptance of what he said, which she didn't do that either.
I think it operates as an endorsement. I think that's a huge problem for Biden amongst African Americans, is that especially embracing some of these old racists as friends and saying, you know, so I think that could be a potential problem. And if she does that, I think it really erases that. So it could be a huge game changer mm-hmm. for them. And I don't think they're comfortable doing that. And I think there is a little bit of a generational divide between the Obamas and Biden, because I do think they're a little bit more left than he is. And so I think a lot of the things they want, they didn't think were possible, and now they seem possible. So they might actually want a candidate that's a little bit more left than Biden.
Mm-hmm. Tamara, do you feel like an endorsement of a former first lady is particularly helpful? And if so, where is Laura Bush's endorsement in this race?
How many former first ladies besides Hillary are still alive?
Laura and Rosalynn Carter. Don't forget Rosalynn Carter. Okay.
And Lady Bird Johnson finally did. She lived to quite a ripe old age.
Three.
We just have three.
Mm-hmm, have three.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's... Mm-hmm. Well, who's killing off the first ladies?
Well, we have four. We including Michelle Bowman.
Okay, that's right. I'm sorry. What was the
question? So, how helpful do you think an endorsement from a first lady really is, especially this far out? But is Michelle Obama really the only one that matters?
I'd say hers certainly carries the most weight,
right,
for sure.
100%.
But it's interesting that I don't know. But I think it's interesting that. I'm not 100% confident that a woman can win this race. I don't think the country.
Do you mean in 2020 or just sort of ever?
In 2020.
No shock. I was going to take that.
That was great.
It was suspicious.
There's the clip from the episode, Ryan.
I mean, that's a good question. I still don't think
ever.
Still don't think the country is ready for that. Apparently. So anyway, so it's just interesting to me that a first lady's endorsement would carry so much weight when they're like, well, we want to hear from a smart, capable woman. But of course, we don't want one.
We don't want one in power, but yeah.
we want her opinion on which guy should be in power.
Exactly.
Do you think, speaking of former first ladies, would a Hillary Clinton endorsement help or hurt? Would it be one of those, no thanks, Hillary, I'm good. I don't need the endorsement. I'm talking about right now, today. Maybe in the general, it could help you by 0.005% or something.
It would probably help someone like Steyer. Nobody knows who he is.
You're like, wait, Hillary likes Steyer? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, right, exactly. He would get the prices right on
the recognition nod.
Yeah. I think it would be a big deal because you would get her endorsement with none of her negatives. You know, they really hammered her on Benghazi. They really hammered her on on things she had done. And though they've demonized her, it was based on the actions that they were able to pin to her.
And she had a cough. Let's not forget that she had a cough. Okay.
So I think it would ultimately help to get, especially this far out, to get that boost.
Sorry, Scott, I really felt like you were about to say something.
I don't think it would be as much of a boost as, say, Michelle Obama.
Sure.
Might be more than Rosalynn Carter, but I think
but more than Martha Washington, let's be honest.
But I think she still has enough of negatives that it's not going to help anyone, where there might be some women, like suburban Republican women that are more moderate that, you know, might have been leaning towards, open to voting for a Democrat that's really, you know, in the Midwest, the place that we need it, might be more excited to hear from Michelle Obama with the backup of who they're supporting versus who she wants. So that's the only thing. Do I think, like, Bill Clinton still carries some weight, even though there's controversy behind him now with going back to Me Too and everything? I still think he does.
Bill Clinton doesn't have great taste in friends. Let's be honest.
Him and Donald Trump.
Jeffrey Epstein.
He's the Democrats' version of Donald Trump, and I've said that for years.
Yeah.
But I still think he would carry, as a former president that still has some popularity, that he would have some weight with his endorsement versus Jimmy Carter, for instance.
I was going to say, but who does Carter like?
Yeah, so.
Who does Carter want to build houses with?
That's true. that's the good question, yeah. Who does Jimmy Carter and Rosalynn Carter want to
get? Well, we could talk about this all day, but we're going to be talking about it for another year and a half, so let's move on. Now, who here on the panel took the time to watch President Trump's 4th of July festivities on the Mall? I had a friend who theorized when the early part of the day there was just a torrential downpour, was said that they were excited to see President Trump's salute to pneumonia. That was my friend Rob's joke. I'm not taking credit for it. I'm giving him the vig on that one. But I referred to the title of this episode is Tribute to All Countries, parentheses, but mostly America, which is anybody who went to Disneyland and saw the Muppet Vision 4D. That's the way that they celebrate there. And it kind of felt like, well, it's like that. It's like America is so great. Personally, I think that the most offensive I can't say that. I think a very offensive thing about Donald Trump is the idea of making America great again. And as a, you know, there's flawed and problems. We're like, It's pretty great. What are you going to compare it to, you know? Syria? Cuba? I could just do four more of those, but I won't.
So, hey, I'm like, I like Cuba. I've been a couple times. And it was,
you want to live there?
I don't know if I want to live there now.
Do you want to get open heart surgery there?
Yes.
You sure? Well, you want to not have to pay for it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. No, I think they have very good trained good doctors healthcare. There. They have great healthcare there. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Well, great.
Yes. That's Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So there you go. That's yeah. Where, yeah, so the next time you need a procedure, exactly. I'll make sure we do a GoFundMe to get you to Havana. So I think that... If you felt like it was genuine love for America and he just wanted to do, you know, if he meant what he said, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, that's a great thing to do. I guess Harry Truman was the last president to address the country on the 4th of July on the National Mall like that. And so, you know, there is a history for it.
After World War II.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Very different times.
Yeah. Just a little. Come on, it's not that different. Yeah. You know, they had Captain America. We have Captain America now. It's really the same thing, in all honesty. No, so I just feel like, obviously... Once you get into, like, I really like how Kim Jong-un has those tanks. Can we get tanks? And then, you know, a lot of the questions were about – not questions, but the criticisms were about all the money they were spending. And I'm like, look, the way that the federal government spends money, this is the least of it.
Right.
You know, spending it on some parade that if people really felt moved by it, I think that would have been – it would have been fine. But, you know, look, another show that I'm on, I sort of casually mentioned that we were going to be – that other show was going to be away for the 4th of July. And it's like, it's all right because we love America. And my host was like, well, I'm not going to say that. I'm like, really? We can't say that. So less about Trump's thing. Is it all right to celebrate America at this point? Shaka, I'm going to start with you as the guest. Is it all right? Do you feel like it's all right to say that? Because I was just surprised. I'm like, wait, we can't say that anymore?
Is it all right to celebrate America? Yeah, of course you can celebrate America.
And look, I'm not pretending there isn't anything wrong. Yeah, I'm just like, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. You know?
You know, I think we can celebrate America. I think people just obviously had an issue with Trump and the way he's undercutting some places. Absolutely. And then getting money from other places. So And it came off as something not as a salute to America, but really a salute to Trump. How could he make history? How could he get his name out there even more and do things that haven't been done before?
More than having the number of buildings with his name on it throughout the course of the world? I was going to say United States, and I realized, like, wait, they're all over the place. No, I think there's one in Moscow. Anyway,
he's really concerned, I think, with his place in history now. And so I think he's trying to do things that he views as historic, one at a time.
Which, look, a lot of presidents do that. You really felt like Obama was very focused on his legacy in the second term. But
legislatively,
like,
though.
Right. Well, I agree. But the extent and sort of the way that that Trump is going about legacy building, you're starting to think like, oh, does he think he's getting reelected? Yeah. Does he not want to? Which that theory is certainly out there. I'm still of the theory, by the way, that what Trump wants more than anything is to win reelection, to prove he could do it, but then be like, oh, yeah, but I don't want it. So Pence is your guy now. No, Pence is going to do it. I'm going to go to Mar-a-Lago. I just wanted to show you all that I could win. But the bigger question. Question, Tamara, do you feel just across these United States, whether you're here in Hollywood or you know in the middle of the country, amongst the elites, you know, if you're summering in the vineyard or out in Nantucket, is it all right to say on the 4th of July, like, oh, there's a song called God Bless America? Can we say that? Or is the problem one with the word God? Not everyone believes in God, and two, not everyone believes in America.
I do think that. Because, and not just, there is a faction of Americans now who are so hyper-nationalistic and take every opportunity to wear their version of patriotism literally on their sleeve by flying flags and putting the symbolism all over everything, and that sort of hyper, what I'll say is pseudo-patriotism, but that hyper-patriotism bordering on nationalism, it does make a lot of other people feel more reluctant to fly a flag outside of their house when maybe normally they would because they don't want to be lumped in with a faction of Americans that they don't necessarily align with politically. I know personally, I've mentioned that like I do a lot of volunteer work with the Hollywood American Legion, so I do working with a lot of veterans organizations. And every year I go into high schools to interview high school girls for this program called Girl State. And when I go into the high school and say I'm representing this veterans organization, and it's a white lady coming into their school talking about military. And the veterans, and I feel like they're assuming that I'm coming from like you know, a very conservative side. So I kind of let them know that that's not where I'm coming from, because at where we are right now, and not just because of Trump, I think ever since, probably slowly building since post 9/11, certainly heightened by the Tea Party, and then, you know, brought up to its zenith once Trump was elected. But like this like hyper nationalism, like I've said, is really has really bubbling to the surface, and it's made a lot of people feel a little bit uncomfortable with not being patriotic, but just not putting it on display, because that can often be misinterpreted. So,
well, Scott, is it as simple as people don't maybe want to put the flag out because they think that might be interpreted as, oh, that's somebody who loves Trump? Could it be that simple?
Well, I, kind of going with what Tamara was saying, what has sort of happened is that, like religion, the party has sort of co-opted patriotism and the military, and it became like, oh, if you support the military and you're patriotic and you're religious, then you're a Republican, because they've tried to co-opt that patriotism. And so, to me, I kind of equate patriotism a lot to like religion, where it's like some people are going to literally wear it on their sleeve. They're going to be very vocal about it, and they're, you know, and other people still love their country, but they don't need to go out every day and be wearing a flag pin and putting their flag out in the front of their house. And so there are different levels.
You don't want to see my Mount Rushmore back tat. That's not how we're going to end the show tonight.
You don't have a Nixon one like.
I can't show
like Roger Stone. You can't just say that.
The Nixon one I can't show on this show. That's for the premium subscribers. Yeah. They get the Trump Report after dark.
Exactly.
Our Patreon subscribers.
Oh, yes. I just wormed my way into
that. No, but that's basically, I think, like Tamara's saying, is that in a lot of ways, the military, the religious faction, and then, of course, the patriotism faction has sort of been co-opted by a political party, whereas it used to be very generalized that we as a country were all, you know, supportive and we all know, again, that the country is far from perfect, but I do think that it's not, and it shouldn't just be a co-opted thing for one political party. It should be for everybody. And again, having Trump turn it into something at the 4th of July in the Washington Mall turned it into more of a political type thing, especially with a person who is deeply not trusted and disliked, makes it into a political thing, even if you are saying it's not. He, again, co-opted into a political party type event and not a America type event, which is unfortunate.
To that point, what I thought was good, because I'm on Twitter a lot, and what I thought is people were saying that this is what America really is, though. And I saw a lot of pushback of people saying, you're not going to define what America really is or what we believe America is. You're not going to kind of water down our patriotism and tell us we're not patriots, defining it on what you believe it is. And so I liked seeing that pushback, and I kind of like that Donald Trump uses Twitter, because I like that we have that medium of people to respond to him and to engage more themselves, and, you know, it's kind of spanning ages. And
yeah, and look, so, he doesn't see all of it, but you know he sees some of it.
Oh, like,
yeah. He can't pretend that he doesn't see any
right.
of
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Which, by the way, you saw the judge said that was...
Yeah, he can't block
people. It's unconstitutional if he's going to be a public...
Are you blocked by...
I am not. I've tried to be blocked so that I could sue them, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Well, just to be able to have that screen grab as your profile picture. That says @SMan80. Donald Trump is
exactly. But like you were saying, I agree with you. And I, a lot of times, I'll get into social media arguments with people, and I'll say one of the most patriotic things you can do is be able to push back. Like when it goes back to women's soccer and Megan Rapinoe, and you know, being able to say, "Hey, I don't agree with what my government's doing right now. I do not agree with this president or whatever." That is one of the most patriotic things you can do, and that is something that, to me, if you're falling in line behind somebody or something, then you're not. Really, truly being patriotic. So I think it's great that people were pushing back, like you said. That is what it is to be an American, in my opinion.
Let us know in the live chat or the archive chat what you think, and we will try and incorporate those comments into next week's episode, which, as I mentioned, will be Wednesday at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. Before we run out of time, Shaka, one of the things that I know you were interested in making sure we talked about today was this idea that President Trump is determined to have a citizenship question on the census, which is what we have next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a census next year. We're going to have a presidential election. So obviously this is all very important. So I'd like to start with you, just get your reaction to how determined the president is in getting a citizenship question on the census.
Of all the things Donald Trump has said or done, this is probably the scariest because we have the
system. Which, of course, is saying something.
Yeah, it really is because we have the system of checks and balances. And the Supreme Court just said, you know, give us back another reason why you want the census question included, but really you can't have it there. And so the fact that he's willing and still looking to defy what the Supreme Court said, that really would kind of upend the whole system of checks and balances. And that, to me, is really dangerous. So the fact that he's saying they're looking at options to somehow include it, even though it's been ruled that it can't be included, is really concerning. So I'm watching that one the closest of all.
And, Scott, what do you think are some of the ways that – I mean, so how can he basically force its way in there? I mean, what is your understanding for how, even though it's been ruled that it can't be included, how might he be able to go about it? I know this might be a Chelsea question.
Well, he really can't. I mean, there's been some talks, oh, you can do executive order.
Can he just get every physical paper, actual census, and just write a question on there and just circle yes or no?
Well, that's my concern is that he, like you were saying, and it's been a concern of mine too, is that he's continuing to defy the checks and balances and thinks he can get away with it. And I've talked about this before. If he loses re-election next year, is he going to have to be physically kicked out? Is he going to now all of a sudden run for a third term if he wins and just say, well, I can do whatever I want, even though in the Constitution you can't? So I am concerned about how far he tries to push it. And then on the other hand, I'm like, is he purposely trying to get impeached so that he can be the martyr? Because I feel like he keeps trying to push it to see how far he can go until he gets slapped.
It's crazy.
And part of my concern is, and I think the Supreme Court would rule on it before, but they could just go to print and put it on there and send it out and make it kind of be stopped by the Supreme Court. But the problem is I think he's going to go as far as he can go, and he's always been able to get away with things. And there really is no option for him unless he really comes back with a legitimate or what the Supreme Court thinks is a legitimate reason, which we all know it's not.
And
really
they missed a deadline for it, yeah.
Technically, yeah, because they're supposed to start printing at the end of the month of July. But, you know, that's the frustrating thing is that I feel like he's just going to go and do whatever he wants and then wait for the Supreme Court to come back and say, no, absolutely not.
Are you suggesting that the federal government would miss a deadline and do something late?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
I know, crazy.
That's not the America that I love, my friend. I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Shaka?
Oh, well, I think the deadline, I think, was Friday to give a response as to, you know, what was the alternative. So, I mean, there's really
– yeah.
And what concerns me the most is Barr going and saying that, oh, they think they have some legal means to do it, because there really should no there are no legal means. So what are they cooking up? And they've switched the teams.
Yeah.
So to me, this is the biggest thing that's really concerning
about
this presidency.
Switching the legal teams was a little scary. It's like, let's go for the team that's really going to play dirty than the other ones that are saying, oh, look, you really can't do it.
I mean,
so it is a concern.
I've never seen an administration try to, like, directly defy what the Supreme Court just ruled on.
And people that just continue to support and be like, it's okay, there's no problems here. And that's my concern, too, is that enough people continue to just be like, sure, do whatever he wants.
Tamara, are you here legally?
is this the platform I choose to answer that question?
Look, you can choose not to answer.
My immigrant relatives did not come here legally.
Oh.
You know, I was born here. Were my predecessors? They didn't come legally, and they had that option. I mean, the census. The purpose of the census is to take a realistic count of what is a slice of America, and by excluding immigrants, it is not going to be accurate. I think we all know that.
But we all know why, though. And it's, again, a power trip, because then you can take resources away from big states like California and New York.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to affect Texas and Florida, but they're really trying to shore up their Republican states because, again, they're going after everything they can do because they can't win on their own when the changing demographics. So what do? You do what you can, and that's cutting out the power from the big states, taking, you know, congressional seats away from places like California and putting them in Republican strongholds. And
it's not even doing whatever they can do. It's what they've always done.
Right.
So this is just now we see it. We know what's going on. So we have these redistricting campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they've always done this. You know?
Right. But now they're just bringing it to another level. Because
now
I feel like they can just, like you said, they can just do it out in the open now. And they don't have any repercussions anymore. So they're not trying to hide it anymore.
Christian,
are
you a citizen?
See. But a question of where? I'm a question.
I'm a citizen
of the world, all right? I'm very worldly, as you can tell from this show. But no, you know what? I don't remember. Maybe I wasn't, you know? But as far as I know, look, I have papers that say I was born in Goshen, New York. So that must be true, right? The real question I wanted to ask, Tamara, is we do only have a couple minutes here. President Trump has the highest job approval of his career. I mean, I guess his career as president. Maybe it was higher as host of The Apprentice. But 44%, which, you know, I think that's less than half, but don't quiz me on that. Does that number sound in any way surprising to you?
I mean, I guess not, because most people aren't. What, 44% are is
the approval? Look, it's an ABC News poll, and, you know, and the, whatever margin for error.
You know,
and all that, but
I mean,
44%.
as far as jobs go, yeah, I would assume 44 people.
44%.
I'm sorry.
No. But 44 people. I think you're definitely
44
right.
People. 44 people are in favor of Trump at this point.
That seems about right.
No. What was I going to say? Real quick though, is that I do. I've been like, are his jobs numbers so great because everybody has three jobs, and so that's why.
Employment is at
300%.
One thing real fast is something that they pointed out a lot when Obama was president. When unemployment numbers go down, there's always you can be unemployed. You can be on unemployment for mm-hmm. about 6 months. Mm-hmm. So then the numbers go down because you might not have a job,
but you're not on
unemployment.
Correct. Yeah.
So you might be unemployed. Yeah. So the unemployment numbers can go down, but that doesn't mean that the job numbers go up. But
right.
It's also an issue of where the jobs are.
Absolutely, I
think it speaks to the fact that the country isn't in tatters, and we do have a system that does work.
Yeah,
I think people expected that the country would have blown up by now too. So I do think people are like, okay, well,
some people are counting on it.
We're still here.
We're not in nuclear war.
Yeah.
We're doing AOK.
Yeah. We're still here.
Yeah.
So.
I but the funny thing about
or
it
we're
is
doing
that
AOC.
Look at you. I know her.
It's funny that poll. He'll be supporting this type of poll or the Rasmussen poll, which always leans Republican. To say, oh, look, I have a 51% approval rating.
Sure.
But then whenever it comes to him being behind, then all of a sudden the polls are fake and they're not real.
Yeah.
So, again, you could say the same thing. You have to take the polls with a grain of salt. And also, where is the 44% support coming from? Because it doesn't matter if it's coming from Alabama. You know, it's going to matter in the swing states, in the upper Midwest, and, you know, that's going to define the election. And that's what the article went on to say, which is true. Okay. He's still in danger of winning re-election.
Yeah, those rallies are full.
Yeah.
Those rallies are full.
I mean, and look, he's always happy to let you know that people wait, overnight for hours to get into those rallies. So, look, I mean, people like Nickelback, too. I mean, they have a number of platinum records, all right?
I read something yesterday about how images of his supporters in MAGA hats turned out to be stock photos to make, a diverse population of people, holding his signs and in the caps.
Well, as they say, we'll have to leave it right there. But, Shaka, thank you so much for joining us today. Please come back, maybe on one of the debate nights, but where can people find you?
Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong.
Oh, Snapchat. Good for you. I'm glad people are keeping it alive. Tamara, where do people find you?
Hey, find me on YouTube at Hey Tamara. So, like those Sarah Huckabee Sanders videos while it's no longer relevant.
She's still funny, and whatever her next job's going to be.
She's going to be running for governor of Arkansas.
And Scott, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, basically trying to get blocked by Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump at SMAN80.
One day.
That's SMAN80.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And as I said before, you will be able to find us next Wednesday at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern. Until then, have a good one.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.